Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All. Less work, more clean. Terms apply.
It's the Two Guys Garage Podcast. He is Kevin Bird. I am Willie B. Appreciate your time. Today, part two with the one and only Gale Banks. I got to tell you, Kev, that last one, oh my God, mind blown. The guy has so much history in hot rodding and making things go fast. Things you wouldn't even think about, right? From military vehicles to boats. He was telling us how he's a savage out in the boat world running, 11 days covering every river in certain parts of the, on the southern part of the equator. I covered every river doing, 208 miles an hour with a toothpick in my mouth, not a problem. It's crazy.
We answered the fundamental question, and that is, yes, Gale Banks has done pretty much everything. Like, he has crossed all boundaries, like you said, from gas to diesel to jet fuel to military to boating, right? From trucks, cars, Bonneville salt flats, you name it, streamliners. This guy has been everywhere and done it, and he's changed the history of IC engines. Internal combustion engines,
right?
Especially when you think diesel. Now, this guy, we talked about last time, we joked around, his axe, right, that he goes and attacks the world with is a turbocharger. He loves boosting, and so he doesn't care what it's running on, right? Jet fuel, no problem. Methanol, bring it. It doesn't matter if it burns. He's going to push it in there. He's going to push it in there harder. He's going to look for efficiencies. He's going to eke out everything. This guy is a mad scientist, man. It's awesome.
Yeah, for sure. And when you read just more about him between the what he's done with the military, I mean, just what he's able to create and do with some of the, the military contracts and some of the really cool things that he's done, some of the faster attack vehicles and marine type support vehicles. It's amazing to think that here's the guy behind all of that on our podcast.
Yeah, he's no one-trick pony, right? You can put him on anything. And if you watch his videos, like, get online and Google Gale Banks or Banks Power, and you'll find just so many incredible videos. And what you get out of it, like, I remember watching one where he was developing a diff cover, right? Cover that goes on the back of your differential. And, most aftermarket guys in diesel world or whatever, they'll have ours is made out of aluminum. It's got cooling fins. It's better. Right? Gale goes out and he's like, let's instrument this thing. Let's see what the coolant is doing, the lubricant's doing inside the differential. Where is it splashing? What is it doing? Where's the airflow? And he'll go out and engineer a damn diff cover that's like 1,000 times better than everyone else's, because he goes at it, with a scientist and engineering mind right along with the hot rodder, right? And he uses like real lab equipment, just like any science lab would, to go and develop all these things, from a simple diff cover to controllers to boost systems to intake manifolds, exhaust setups. It's pretty incredible.
Yeah, it is. And Gale joins us now. Gale, thanks for taking the time to come back on with us. And again, man, reading throughout your history, I love the fact when you go Google your name, there is so many hot rod articles, so many articles about all the cool things you've had your hands in, you created, and you've just done for us hot rodders, man. It's an amazing story, Gale. Really, truly amazing.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I miss the magazines, the print.
Right.
And you were talking about hot rod. When we started applying turbocharging to cars, would probably be the late 60s, early 70s, but we're heavy into the boats. And Kevin was just talking about different fuels. I'll give you a little fuel story. We ran an injected fuel, an unblown fuel hydroplane, a drag boat, back in the 70s called the Crucifier. The whole idea was I wanted the thing to ET. I didn't give a damn what the speed was going out the back door, but I wanted to get there quickly. With a hydro, you got to pop the tail, get up on the prop, and then you're going. So I wanted to be able to pop the tail like a blown boat. So we screwed with camshaft, and I didn't care if I killed the engine in the lights. Luckily, we didn't. It was an injected late model Chrysler. We ran 100% nitromethane. So back then, we didn't have the spark plugs that we have today. So if I burnt the ground straps off the plugs in a quarter mile pass, I knew it was a good pass because the ground straps were gone. They were sacrificial. So Bob Vogel drove the boat. He introduced me to a guy, Zuchel was his name, engine builder out here. Zuchel was screwing around with a hydrazine, which is a rocket fuel. And being out here where, you know, I'm one half a mile from the Aerojet Azusa test facility where they tested rocket engines way back in the 50s, even in the 40s probably. And there's a whole bunch of hydrazine in the water table here. We're a super fun site. Anyhow, Zuchel said, hey, Gail, why don't you try X ounces of hydrazine per gallon of nitro? I get some hydrazine. You can't even buy hydrazine today. This stuff is quite volatile. When you expose it to oxygen, it starts oxidizing. We open the vial, it kind of goes, ugh. And Vogel is standing there, the driver, and he's going, holy shit, did you hear that? It went, ugh. I said, yeah, and he's going and going, and we're down at Marine Stadium, and I'm mixing the hydrazine with the nitromethane, and I'm going, what the hell? Get this guy away from me. I put in an order of magnitude, 10 times too much.
Whoa, this is going to be good.
He idles out to the line, and you hang on a rope, and then they start you moving towards, and then they give you the green light. This thing pops the tail. He's up on the prop like a blown boat. I mean, better than a blown boat. And that thing is gone. He leaves the competition. About 2 seconds into the run, he puts all the Chrysler in the bilge. I mean, it just was one of those deals where it just kind of went, ugh, and locked up. Luckily, we didn't put a hole in the bottom of the boat. So he gets out on the nose, and it's a pickle fork hydro. He's paddling in. We get it up on the trailer, and Vogel looks at me. He said, that was like God hit me in the back with an 8-pound hammer. How soon can we do that again? I told him, Vogel, never. So there's my hydrazine story. Another fuel tried.
So that was it, huh? You didn't like back down to 9 times over, 8 times?
I didn't want any part of that.
Well, that's probably why you're still alive today. You know, having enough brains to know when to when get out of that game.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Sometimes I relive some of those street racing episodes. Oh, even back then, back in the 60s, I raced first Fords, 406, 427, side oiler, tunnel port Fords, and FE series engines. And then I got into the Chevys. I never raced a 409. I built plenty of them. But when they came out with the 396 and then the 427, and I moved to Chevys. I won a lot of money racing on the street, early 60s.
Right.
But damn near got killed too many times. I mean, and the cops. The cops were always a bad deal.
Willie wouldn't know anything about any of that, man. No siree.
Yeah.
He's looking all guilt-ridden here.
This is a rated PG show right here.
Had a couple run-ins, Gail. A couple run-ins.
Yeah. Can't be talking about Willie.
So let me ask you a question. You know, you look back.
Oh, yeah.
And you think all the insane stories and the times when you're pushing the envelope. When you were back then doing these things in the 60s, doing these things in the 70s, and thinking to yourself, what's next and what can I get my hands on? Is it going to be this crazy fluid or, you know, combustible fuel? Is it going to be a new design? What has inspired you throughout the years to keep pushing yourself so hard? What makes Gail Banks get up in the morning and kind of tick? Because you don't seem like you ever get tired of it. And that to me is, you know, a definite sort of defining sort of thing that a lot of people don't have, that desire to keep pushing that envelope, to keep trying, to keep reinventing the wheel, if you will.
Yeah, take a minute, Gail, and think about that. We got to take a quick break. So when we come back on the other side, let's get your answer on that one, because I'm pretty stoked to hear about that one, too.
You got it.
It's the Two Guys Garage Podcast. Kevin Bird, Willie B., Gail Banks. Dun, dun, dun. Back in just a minute. All right, this is the Two Guys Garage Podcast. Kevin Bird, Willie B., Gail Banks from Banks Engineering. And Gail, you know, before the break, I was kind of asking you, man, you've seen and done so much, and it's, you know, inspiring on every level. If you look back at what you were doing, you know, in the 50s, in the 60s, in the 70s, you've always pushed the envelope. You've always tried to, I don't know, take it to the next level. What do you think is the reason behind that? What has possessed you to get up in the morning and go, today I want to push the envelope in this fashion or in this regard? I'm going to find out where the breakpoint is. What is it about you that fuels that passion?
Competition. I'm a racer. How did I get into this? You know, I went to high school in the 50s, and you either walked to school, rode a bicycle, or you had a car. And frankly, the guys with the best looking dates had a car.
So things haven't changed much, I guess, you know?
We all thought, all us guys, that the sound of the car was something primal. And guess what? I think we were right. So we win in the marketplace as often as we can. That drives me forward. I want that next win. It's a narcotic. And I'm
true.
Hopelessly addicted to horsepower.
Oh, what a great answer.
There is no, I mean, there. I tell you, man, there's no 12-step program for my affliction.
Yes.
I'll never get over it. I'll go into the ground being a gearhead.
All right. So speaking of affliction, in all these years, can you pull out, you know, a couple, one, two, three of your favorite, you know, junky moments where you just shot it up and you got the adrenaline pump and you're going to remember that for the rest of your life? Like, what are some of your most proudest projects or accomplishments in there?
There's a number. In boat racing, we built a boat called Hurry Round Hondo. It was a unlimited class jet boat. Mm-hmm. And that was...
Sounds fun already.
Yeah. 2,200 horsepower, 18-foot boat.
Jesus.
And we ran against guys with blowers. And this is in the 70s, as I said. We went to Marine Stadium in Long Beach. It was a 1,600-meter course, like 1 mile. And you did a U-turn. You can run a half mile down, make a U-turn, half mile back. So it was two pins, one pin on each end to turn it. You do a 180. We rigged the boat so it wanted to turn left all the time. You had to muscle to go straight. And we had a lot of power on the other guys. A photographer by the name of Jack Cool had a camera mounted on a rifle stock. Very cool. And he aimed that thing like it was a rifle. And he had a trigger, a cable shutter release rigged to the trigger. He shot a shot at Marine Stadium. We just completed the first lap, 1 mile. The second place boat was on the other side, on the back side. We had a half mile lead in 1 mile over the second place boat.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you know, we talked about this in the last one where you showed up to Bonneville and just smoked the record by almost 40 mile an hour. And that's what this guy does. Yeah. He just shows up and puts a half mile lead on a mile. You know,
I think the thing that really, the Firebird at Bonneville, that was another one where that car is sitting in the NHRA museum. It's a red pre-production Firebird. They gave me a pre-production car, so there's no VIN number. The last time we ran it, it was badged as a 87 GTA. We went out with a car. I put 250 on the door. That was my competition number. I wanted to go 250, which was 10 miles an hour faster than the Sundowner Corvette, the 240. What got me into the Firebird was John Chanella, the stylist on the Firebird that year for the 82, for that generation, I should say. And they'd been in the GM wind tunnel. He calls me up with Bob Dorn, the chief engineer, and he said, "We're reading popular hot rodding, the article 240 Sporty. And you went 240 on that Corvette, and that's real respectable. But how would you like to go 20 miles an hour faster with the same powertrain and in a different car?" And I said, "I'd love to do that. What do you suggest?" "Well, we have this new Firebird coming out, and it is aerodynamic like mad. We spent a lot of time in the tunnel with it. We want to prove that it's fast. But we're putting in these emasculated smog motors." The 80s were the dark ages.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like Fight Club. We don't talk about the 80s.
Yeah.
Yeah. We built these twin turbo 700 horse Firebirds. We had one on the cover of Car and Driver at 204 miles an hour on the street, Mrs. Orcutt's driveway, June of 84. Nobody had gone 200 miles an hour with a magazine car. 160 something was fastest for Car and Driver, Road Track, all of them on the street. We went 204. I got this car, went over to the Desert Proving Grounds, which was then at Mesa, Arizona, with an enclosed trailer, picked up my car. It was going to be a Hot Rod magazine project, and the editor was going to drive it and all that jive. We got rained out at Bonneville for a few years. I had other things that interfered. We finally ran for the first time in 86. Our two-way average was 260. Exactly 20 miles an hour faster. Their prediction came true. We went back the next year. Our two-way average, I believe, was 267. Our best one-way was 277. This is a manual five-speed, dual-disc clutch, and a lot of rear axle ratio. We destroyed a Doug Nash five-speed in three passes. We tried running at the dry lakes, just screwing around and just peeled the gears right off the teeth. I mean, the teeth right off the gear. Let me get it right. So we annealed the gears. So they became sacrificial, and we got 3 5-mile passes out of a set of gears. And then we would change the transmission. There was no trance to handle this. Anyhow, our best mile was 283. Pardon me. Our best back door was 283. Our best mile, 277. We didn't go faster because we tested the Mickey Thompson front tires at Smithers Scientific in Akron, and they exploded at 280 miles an hour with a 1,000-pound load on a 10-foot diameter roller. So I wanted to go 300, but I didn't want to kill Don Stringfellow, who is a driver. So we limited it to that. Since then, guys have used Firebirds to go well over 300. That's a big deal to me. That was the Corvette at 240 was brutally fast. This thing was insanely fast. And the record, we broke that record by over 60 some miles an hour. They actually helped me financially to build that car. Pontiac did it. They paid for about a third of what it cost me to do it. So that was real. I'm very proud of that. Some of the engines I've done for the military, we did an S-15-based pickup truck called the Cyclone at Bonneville. It wasn't called the Cyclone the first year out. We ran 194 two-way, naturally aspirated, 300-inch V6. The next year, we gave it some more compression, turned some more RPM, better cylinder heads, and ran a 204 two-way, 210 one-way. I wanted to beat that record. That was whenever the Cyclone came out, early 90s, right?
Uh-huh.
We came back. I met the one of the board members from Cummins at a talk I was doing at a Dodge dealership down in Long Beach. And he hung out for my talk. And then afterwards, he told me he's running this Cummins Skunk Works. They were working on a new V8 engine and all this jive, this early 2000s. And they were also working on what's called a common rail version of the Cummins, inline six. I said, hey, I want to go 300 with a diesel. Nobody had done it at that time. I have a Streamliner. I think we've been 382 with a 300-inch early model DeSoto and a 1271 running 30% nitro. I said, this thing will go 300 with a diesel, I think. Do you want to do that with a Cummins? And he said, hell yeah. I said, well, can you help me do it? He says, well, we don't have any money. Our stock's way down. Our existing engine in the Dodge truck is not selling well. Come back to the Skunk Works. Talk to my guys. Well, they wanted me to run their V8. There were only two of them running at the time. I said, you don't know if you have a girl or a boy, but I like this B common rail. And you do have a customer for that. So they sent me some junk dyno engines. We ultimately got 735 horsepower out of the 5.9.
Well, that was a ton back then, too.
It was.
You know?
Well, nobody'd ever hot rodded. This was before the engine was available in a pickup truck, about a year before. We put it in a Dakota. We went to Bonneville. And we ran 222 was our best. But rather than arrive in a trailer, the Dakota arrived pulling a trailer with all our pit gear, jacks, car stands, gear sets, race tires, wheels, all of it. We took to Bonneville with the race truck.
What year was that?
I think it was 02.
I was probably there for that.
Yeah, I still remember that one.
We got an FIA record. We got an FIA record. We got Bonneville records. Nobody's ever gone faster than our FIA record with a diesel. I mean, it's a world record for God's sakes against cars, you know.
Yeah, man. I mean, you look at your history and just again all these ET. For people that don't know what he says, two way at Bonneville, you have to make a run and then you have to back that run up for it to become a world record the next morning. So you put your car in an impound, you can't really mess with it too much, and you go back and make another strike to do it two ways, and they take an average of those two, as long as it's over that certain mile per hour, the record.
It's not with international records, and not back then. You had to do the two-way within 1 hour. You didn't have overnight
to go
make love to your race car and make it good again. It had to do with wind. These guys run the same direction twice. We had if you went down with the wind, you came back against it.
Right, right, right.
Yeah, the rules have really softened up and gotten far easier to set records unless they're international. The international is still a 1 hour.
That's brutal. All right, well, look, let's take a break right now, because when we come back, you still have to tell us, where do you think it's going? Because, you know, you look at some of these and the fuels and where we're headed, where is the next evolution in the internal combustion engine going to come from? Is it going to be diesel? Is it going to be gasoline, corn? What's going to be the fuel that motivates us next? And where are we going to get all that performance from? We'll talk about it coming up with Dale Banks, my man Kevin Bird, and Willie B on the Two Guys Garage podcast. Back in just a minute. It's the Two Guys Garage podcast. He is Kevin Bird. I am Willie B. We have Gail Banks on the phone. If you don't know who Gail Banks is, are you even a hot rodder? Should you be listening to this podcast? I'm serious. Turn off your podcast and go have your parents put you in a corner somewhere. No, but seriously, we have the man, the myth, the legend, Gail, who's raced damn near everything possible. To hear him talk about how he's hit this mile per hour, that mile per hour, is just amazing to me. And to think about the fuels that he's used to do it. He's really, you're known for diesel, but you really cut your teeth in gas engines and race fuel and everything like that. What was that transition, and where do you think the fuel of the future is going to come from? Is it diesel? Is it gas? Is it corn? Is it What do you think is going to be fueling our cars in the next few years?
Whatever it is, it has to have a higher energy density, BTUs per pound of mass. And batteries aren't anywhere near there right now. So is electricity the current answer? I'd say in terms of electricity, we're around 8% of where it should be to become the universal answer. Battery technology has to change. How do we dispose of the battery? People have to stop lying about the mileage, the range, because the range, what sort of terrain and at what speed is that range?
Not the way I drive.
Not the way I drive either. It's going to be a liquid or a gaseous fuel for the time being. Diesel has the highest energy density, energy per gallon, energy per pound, kilogram, however you want to look at it. But the combustion process is the issue. It's also the opportunity. Now, the gasoline guys have done a lot. They've copied a lot of diesel stuff, direct injection being a diesel thing. And the diesel guys haven't really copied enough gasoline stuff, a spark ignition. There's no variable valve timing in any diesel I'm aware of. There could be quite easily. But during valve overlap, the pistons come real close to the valves. So you're kind of limited there. If you put valve reliefs in the pistons, you screw up the combustion process because there's this thing going on called swirl. That's the rotation of the air. And you inject into the denser air, which is centrifuged out to the perimeter of the cylinder wall. And as the piston squishes it at top dead center, it pushes that density into the combustion chamber. What happens in the combustion chamber? For years, we'd had to theorize that. There's a lot of technology today where you can view it. You can view it optically. You can view it in a thermal manner. You can look at the strata of air-fuel ratio. And that's one thing here at Banks Power, we've been working on quite heavily, is using all the air in chamber and trying to make uniform the air-fuel ratio in the combustion chamber. In other words, we don't want a stratified charge. We want a homogeneous charge. So there's unused oxygen in the process, and we're changing the shape of the combustion chamber. That's part of the gig I'm working on here. But I believe that compression ignition probably is the best shot at it in terms of future combustion process.
For gas or just for diesel?
Huh. A lot of guys would like to do compression ignition gas, but it's too volatile. It auto ignites too easily.
Yeah, there's a lot of work, HECI.
You could say diesel. You could say diesels run on detonation, and spark ignition engines fail on detonation.
Right.
So, So, in terms of range, in terms of cost of the fuel, diesel's pretty cool. In terms of after treatment, it's not. So the opportunities with compression ignition probably stay with a fuel that looks something like diesel fuel. There's more refined versions. There's diesel fuel made from gas, natural gas, GTL, gas to liquid, it's called. The Germans kind of pioneered that during World War II. And GTL diesel, there's a lot of extra methane in the United States right now. They burn it off in North Dakota because there's no pipe, no way to get it to market. You could make diesel fuel out of it right there. You'd have some pretty sweet diesel fuel that would allow you to do more things with less emissions, in my estimation. You look at us, we sell Derringer tuners and six guns and all kinds of tuning stuff that we do, and intake systems and exhaust and diff covers. And, you know, I'm curious. I go out if it intrigues me, we make a product out of it. If there's a market. But where are we going in the future? Also, part of that is hybrid. Having a motor generator unit hanging on the back where the flywheel is, oh boy, is that sweet stuff. We did two test series for BMW 10, 12 years ago. One was the Hydrogen 7. It was a V12 injected engine, no turbos. It ran on gasoline at 420 horsepower, and you turn on the hydrogen, turn off the gasoline injectors, made 270. But hydrogen is hard to store. And if you want a lot of range, you have to make it liquid. But to make it liquid, you got to get it real cold. You can't compress it enough at ambient temperature to liquefy it. So they had made it incredibly cold, like 270 below zero, some number like that, put it into a tank with a tank around it, and then they vaporized liquid hydrogen in that gap between the two tanks to keep it cold. So you were already using hydrogen to keep the hydrogen cold, and then it just vented to atmosphere. Second problem with hydrogen, if you left it parked in your garage and you had a water heater was standing pilot, or when the water heater turned on and you had open flame, the hydrogen that was leaking out of the tank would blow up your garage.
Yeah, that's not good. I'm thinking that won't sell.
And when I took it up to Yosemite, I did high altitude work for BMW. The air fuel ratio is 32-1. That's stoichiometric. When you get up to altitudes like you guys have every day in Colorado,
yeah,
the horsepower just disappeared.
Yes, it does.
You didn't have enough air density to run. We're well under a 200 horsepower in a 7 series BMW. Scratch hydrogen right there. And the last nail in the coffin for hydrogen, the best way to make it is electrolysis. You electrolyze water. To make one BTU of hydrogen takes 4.2 BTUs of electrical energy. Does that sound practical? Only if you have nuclear power. And nobody wants nuclear power because we're all scared to death of nuclear power for some reason. Of course, the French have been using it for decades, and no Chernobyls there. Maybe we should pay the French for their technology. The second one was the Hybrid 7. The Hybrid 7 was a twin-turboed nominal 4-liter double overhead cam V8 with a 60 kilowatt motor generator unit where the flywheel goes. When you made that thing motor and you went wide open throttle with a twin turbo V8, that big ass 7 series BMW would nail your head to the headrest. I mean, it's just something to behold. I like the idea of a hybrid hot rod. I would love to build an all-wheel drive 32 Ford Roadster with a hybrid hot rod setup under the hood.
Well, it's amazing when you think about hybrids that, you know, when it first came out, kind of Prius, the aura around it, like the whole thing was meant to fit in a, you know, a tree hugger image.
Yes.
Right? That's the customer. That's who we're trying to attract. You know, small little tires, a little car that looks kind of funky, space age. It stood out as, I'm a hybrid buyer.
You mean stupid?
It's what you call hybrid ugly.
Yeah, but look at hybrids now when you think about, you know, on the performance end. Because just like you're saying, right, you combine the best of both worlds from a performance perspective versus the ultra, ultra efficiency perspective, you kind of find the balance point between going stupid fast and being, you know, the ultimate in efficiency and being actually just pretty darn good, right? Regen on the braking, store a little bit of energy, have that sucker ready to kind of give you that extra boost, go along with the IC engine. And the next thing you know, you're in supercar territory, right?
So and if you use the hybrid aspect, the motor component, all the time during acceleration, normal acceleration, the emission signature of the IC engine drops tremendously because you're not enriching so much. So when you enrich, you drive cylinder temperature, and cylinder temperature drives NOx, N-O-X. Mm-hmm. And then we got to deal with that. So a lot of diesel tuners I'm talking about factory guys, to meet emissions, sometimes they put a hole in the torque curve where the NOx gets real bad, or do something else like retard the injection timing, which is just criminal. You know, my tool there is nice, clean, cool, inert exhaust gas to recircuit. Done right, exhaust gas recirculation is a performance tool. And I use a lot of that in my tuning products. And guys wonder, how the hell did those guys pull that off? Or they say, oh, we checked Banks and he's got a lot of EGR. And I go, yep, I sure do. And I use it to advantage. So in other words, I can make more power using the EGR than the other guy can without, and still pass emissions.
Yeah, that's key.
There's another component, and that's called full delete, or, you know, guys will get a new truck and go off the agency floor, right to their garage and pull all the emissions equipment off and put a tune in that doesn't have anything to do with emissions whatsoever. And a lot of times doesn't have much to do with engine life. But it's a small percentage of the market. I call that racing engines. That's what I do if I go racing. So I'm into full deletes. And oh, by the way, all of our military engines that are tactical, emissions equipment becomes unreliable in battlefield situations. You don't want to plug up your DPF.
Yeah, the DPF is the biggest point of failure.
You don't need a regen moment, you know?
Yeah. You don't need a regen moment. So wisely, Congress has seen fit. If you're war fighting, there's a lot of smoke. You know, things are exploding and there's smoke. Our diesels don't smoke on the battlefield. You know, the calibration is as clean as we can make it. Fuel efficiency, range is a big thing that you consider when you're deciding what your tactics are and your battle plan is. So I'll say this. We've probably in a few short years, I've built as many military engines as I have performance engines in 62 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And we just had what's called a recompete, where we had to compete against other engine manufacturers for the second generation of this vehicle, which starts around, I don't know, 2024 and probably goes to 2034, something like that. And the final round was against Cat and us.
Wow.
And we got it.
Really?
So we're going to be doing the JLTV diesel engine with GM until probably 2034.
Wow. Yeah, and that is the kind of latest and greatest, most badass Humvee.
Yeah.
To kind of put a picture in your head of what this guy is delivering for powertrains. Now, it's kind of cool to listen to you, Gail, because, you know, you think of most people in the aftermarket, they're very kind of singular focused, right? I'm just the supercharger guy, and I'm just going to keep turning that knob. And here you are investigating, testing, you know, in communication talks with OEs, with all the aftermarket on just about every possible space, with a level of knowledge that you can then, you know, make some strategic decisions and, you know, start to project into the future. And you can see, you know, when Willie asked you the question on, you know, why are you still geeked up about all this stuff, is because, right, you're grasping at tomorrow constantly. You've got the whole map kind of laid out on what tomorrow is and all these different branches, whether it's diesel, whether it's gas, whether it's electric and hybrid and all these other things. And so it's a little bit more clear in my mind, like what's getting you up every morning, because there's all these answers left unanswered, right? All these questions left unanswered. So pretty cool. Now, what I got out of that was the IC engine still lives.
Yeah.
It might be married to some sort of electrical propulsion device, regen device, which kind of makes me a little nervous on one end. Like, oh, there's another thing there that I got to work with, work around. But then on the other hand, it's like, well, damn, if it makes me go faster, you know, maybe that's okay too.
That's the whole idea.
Maybe I recapped it, you know, somewhere in the ballpark, but it sounds like from a Gale perspective, we're going to be burning stuff for a little while longer, and we're still going to be going fast and hopefully even faster.
Well, I figure, you know, I'm 78. Ed Iskandarian is 99 years old, and he's a futurist. And what a great chat. Oh, my God. You ever talk to Isky? You remember it.
I'd love to. I'd love to.
He sponsored, first guy to ever sponsor me back in 1960 was Ed Iskandarian. That's another whole nother deal. Here's the deal. In my world, there are known knowns, things you know. And then there are known unknowns, things you've identified you want to know, but you don't know yet. And then there are unknown unknowns. Right, Kevin?
Yes, sir.
That's where you were going. It's the unknown unknowns that I want to ferret out and I want to solve.
Oh, this is awesome, man. Gail, we are going to have to bring you back. Sure. Now, real quick, tell everybody, because we didn't even get to talk about all the amazing kind of products and things that you guys are always, you know, up on your website, what you guys produce, what you guys make. All the things for us.
Yeah, there's lots of gasoline stuff on bankspower.com. There's lots of motorhome stuff. In fact, I'm working on a V10 Ford.
Oh, yeah.
Altitude compensation turbo.
Ooh, the old Triton. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think Ford is still building mm-hmm. that V10 until
cool,
the 7.3 gets into the motorhome.
Yeah.
Then I'll turbo that thing.
So check them out. Yeah, so you're on Banks Power.
Yeah.
Bankspower.com. Now you've got a lot of videos. You have your own channel. What on YouTube?
Yeah, it's Banks Power YouTube and Banks Power Facebook.
Awesome. Awesome.
It's
awesome.
Both of them.
Yeah, I check them out all the time, man. You guys got to get online. Look at some of these videos.
Of course, we're on Instagram too. We're out there.
Oh, man. Well, Gail, we really appreciate it, man. This has been awesome. Yeah. I mean, to get 50 some years of your insight, your experience, your stories. Super cool. We will have to carve out some more time again in the near future to have you back.
All right. It's my pleasure and my honor. Thank you both.
Yeah, man. Thank you so much. And keep on doing what you're doing, man. We're just going to sit back. I'm one of those guys. Somebody has got to be on the curb to clap when you go by. That's me, man. I'm on a curb clapping when you guys go by the parade. I'm like, wow,
you put a couple turbos on that Mopar. I'll clap for you.
I do have turbos on my Mopars.
I mean, you're gasping for breath up there in Colorado. Air density.
None. All right. Well, Gail, thank you so much, man. Hey, don't forget about Show Air Weekends on the Motor Trend Network. Check your local listings. Also, episodes now streaming on Motor Trend On Demand, which is a great way to find us. Find part one of the podcast with Gail. It is fantastic as well. Thanks to my boy, Kevin Bird. For Gail Banks, I am Willie B., our producer, Scooper, and executive producer, Bob Ecker.
Yeah, and don't forget to check out our website, twoguysgarage.com, and share your thoughts with us on social. We're everywhere. Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Two Guys Garage. Now, Two Guys Garage Podcast is a copyright, 2020 Britton Productions Incorporated, all rights reserved. Man, that is too cool talking to one of the legends, right? He's covered so much ground everywhere, done it all. Man, we just need a whole nother series of podcasts called Hanging Out with Gail.
Dude, he's such a pioneer. He's such a rule breaker, groundbreaker. The guy has just defined hot rod and pushing the envelope in so many ways and aspects. It's just amazing. So really cool that we got to talk with him. Not once, but twice.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, we are out of time this time, everybody. So we will catch you on the next Two Guys Garage Podcast.
Two Guys Ride Podcast is a production of Britain Productions. For more episodes, visit iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.